It's the story that's rewriting box office history. A movie that's defied the critics. A biopic heading towards the $1 billion mark. Dismissed by many for sanitising its subject and avoiding the allegations that dogged his life, Michael has nevertheless drawn devoted lifelong fans and curious newcomers alike. So what is it about Michael Jackson that continues to captivate audiences decades later? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And when Michael Jackson died back in 2009, he was more than $500 million in debt. Today, his estate is worth $2 billion, having been rebuilt through royalties, MJ the Musical, a Cirque du Soleil collaboration, merchandise, and now this film. 4 weeks after the biopic's release, Michael Jackson gained 40 million Spotify listeners and 748 million additional streams. He's been the most played artist in the UK on YouTube in the last month. Billie Jean is currently the most played song on Spotify around the world. The essential Michael Jackson has fended off competition from Irish language rap group Kneecap to return to the number one spot on the UK album charts. I think it's fair to say that Michael has been a huge hit with the performer's many fans right around the globe for its study on his childhood and recreations of famous concert performances and music videos. Jafar Jackson, the son of Jermaine Jackson, Michael's brother, received particular praise for the portrayal of his uncle. But many critics called the film a whitewash, with several reviewers saying it depicted a sanitised version of his life and career. This is mostly as it doesn't address the sexual abuse allegations against the late singer after her historic non-disclosure agreement and NDA prompted some footage referencing them to be scrapped. The Hollywood Reporter said the feature delivers for lifelong fans who cherish the music, but The Telegraph, well, it said it refuses to address the elephant in the room, and The Independent went a bit further. It's ghoulish, soulless cash grab. But the poor reviews did not deter the fans. To understand the phenomenon that is Michael Jackson and what's driving his success, I'm joined now by Professor Ellis Cassmore, who is a sociologist. And in a few moments, I'll be joined by broadcaster Serena Bellissimo. Well, as I said, Professor Ellis Cassmore is a sociologist and author of the book The Destruction and Creation of Michael Jackson. You're very welcome to the programme, Professor. I mean, many reviewers of this movie absolutely dismissed it, right? And that's me using kind terms. They said it was an abysmal load of nonsense. But moviegoers have turned it into the most successful music biopic ever released.
Yeah.
Can you help us understand why that is?
Yeah, I think I can in any case. Michael Jackson's fandom, you know, I'm talking about his global fan base, is different from any other rock star, pop stars, musicians, entertainers of any kind. They all have fans, but not quite fans who approach them with the same kind of intensity, the same kind of passion, and the same kind of almost religious fervor that they approach Jackson. I came across this almost by accident. You know, I study celebrity culture and I write on the subject and do research. And several years ago, shortly after Jackson had died, I was invited to Cork to participate in what was described as a seance. It was put together by a television station, and they invited a group of loyal Jackson fans, and they staged this seance. I wasn't invited into the actual room where the seance took place, but I did my interview and observed what was going on and talked to all manner of other people. After the seance had completed, I was in the bar downstairs just chatting to the members of the production team, and the participants came out and landed in the bar and sat down, and they looked absolutely distraught, you know, overcome with what I mistook as anxiety, but it was some other kind of emotional engagement that I had never seen apart from people who had undergone religious experiences. And it really was, Ciara, as if these people had undergone a religious some kind of conversion or epiphany or an experience, a visitation of some kind. And I naturally, as a researcher and somebody who writes on these kind of things, I wanted to talk to them, and I did. And I thought, I haven't seen fans like this before. And, you know, I've done plenty of research into celebrity culture and the people who follow celebrities. And, of course, one of the questions that I've been asking over the past several years is, why are we so interested in people who really do not make much of a material difference to our lives in a personal sense? This was something different, and it really alerted me to the fact that Jackson fans are a breed unto themselves. They are of a qualitative difference to other fans. And don't forget, I'm old enough to have lived through Beatlemania, and I could just about remember as a child, you know, when Elvis came along, and have seen, you know, people who have been devoted to Morrissey and the Smiths and all manner of other artists over the years, but never quite seen something like this. And so it didn't surprise me when I read about the film, and of course it's been in progress for several years now. It's been held up for a long time. So I knew that this is going to get a reception like no other film. It would have to be seriously bad to be dismissed.
But I suppose the question is, why? Why has he remained this massive cultural icon despite all of the allegations that would have permanently damaged many other celebrities? What's the sociological explanation for that?
You've really answered it without knowing. It's the controversy itself. The guy isn't just loved, is also hated, probably in equal portions. I mean, this is a man that divides the world. Still, even in his death, he divides the world. There are people, you mentioned the name Michael Jackson, and, you know, they will tear a strip off you. And yet other people are still like lovers. I mean that quite literally. They still love him with a passion that's reserved for, you know, the people that they do properly fall in love with and marry, perhaps, their partners. This is a man who, throughout his singing career, made people not just like him, but love him. And yet, in his death, he made people hate him. And I think that notoriety that he's established in his afterlife, I think that has what's maintained the discourse around Michael Jackson. And as long as that discourse keeps going, people will know him, argue over him, love or hate him. And I can't see an end in sight.
I mean, can people then genuinely separate the artist from the art? Is that something people consciously decide, or does music become so tied up to identity, to memory, that separating them isn't actually possible? It isn't a choice?
Well, we can separate it. We can. But is it meaningful? You know, because I always think, you know, there are a great many artists throughout history. And the more you learn about them, you think, what nasty people they were, and how much I disagree with their morality, their values, what they stood for. And yet I listen to their music. Let's take Wagner, for example, and just think, this is heartbreakingly beautiful music. This is music that I can just listen to, and it brings a tear to my eye. So it arouses such incredible passions in the consumer, the listener, the audience. And yet, you can despise the person. So, you know, it's perfectly possible for the likes of you and I, and, you know, we can manage to have intellectual discourse about this and make that separation. But the fan has no inclination, particularly. You know, if they're in love with an entity, they're not making that distinction. Some will, and some will be reminded of it. And I'm sure Jackson fans who are wrapped up in the whole Jackson mystique would be reminded continually, do you know what this guy did? And they'll say, I am aware of that, but the guy did die, an innocent human being. He was cleared of the charges. And as far as I'm concerned, that's good enough.
All right, we'll leave it there. Professor, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
My thanks to Professor Ellis Cashmore, also joining me here on News Talk Daily today. And she's here in studio, is Serena Bellissimo, critic and broadcaster. Serena, you're very welcome back to News Talk Daily.
Hi.
The contrast between the critics and audiences here is surely one of this year's most notable entertainment stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, we'll start off with this straight away. On Rotten Tomatoes, where most of us go to see what are people giving it, on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics rated Michael at 38%. Audiences rated it at 97%. I remember when I was reviewing this, and I'm not trying to say I told you so and I'm one of the smarter ones, because that I am not. But I remember I was reviewing this and I said, when you review this film, there's two ways to review it. There's the way of looking at it like a film, breaking it down. Are you getting what you need from this biopic in the technical way, or looking at it in the way that fans are looking at it? And both ways are going to give you very different results. And that's what the critics did. They were just reviewing this as a movie. And I remember I went in there, I was like, when I walked out, I was just like, yeah, fans are going to be booking their tickets as soon as they walk out of the cinema to watch another one, because this movie wasn't about what was missing, what they could have expanded on. This movie was about how it made you feel. And fans, it made them feel like they were back with the Michael Jackson that they know and they love. And it was all about his music and his legacy. And I think that's what the fans are rating this on, the feeling, and the critics are rating this on an actual piece of cinema.
It's funny you should mention that Rotten Tomatoes piece, because Branca, who was Michael Jackson's executor of his will, his lifelong friend, even though they fell in and out loads of times, he said, and he was heavily involved in this movie, he said one of the greatest pleasures, one of the biggest pleasures is Rotten Tomatoes. How the hell these people have jobs?
Well, because as I said, they're two very different things, I think. And this is an issue for another day, but I think the way film criticism is going is it's no longer about the technicality of the cinema making. I think people are now going to the cinema to feel something, Kira. We're like living in this world where it's all just doom and gloom, and people want to go to the cinema and feel something, whether it be something really intense and emotionally jarring, or whether it be fun. And for them, this film, Michael, was about igniting the fun and the passion back in their lives, the ones who absolutely loved it.
Was Michael Jackson ever truly cancelled, do you think?
No. No. And it's as simple as that. It's really funny. I think there are so many figures who were cancelled, but Michael Jackson could never be cancelled because of his fan base. His fan base truly believed in him and truly believed that there was this manhunt out for him to take him down. They don't believe that Michael Jackson did anything wrong. So that's why, even if the rest of, like, Rotten Tomatoes is almost like the percentage when it comes to the cancellation as well. Like, even if the rest of the world was saying, oh, look, even if he didn't do something, there's something that's not quite right there, that the fans were like, no, no, you're just taking him down. So when you have a fan base as strong as that and who genuinely believe in you, I think there's no cancellation happening.
Even though loads of radio stations and broadcasters did reduce or stop playing his music after that 29 documentary, Leaving Neverland, I rarely heard his music publicly again. There was public tributes, events were cancelled or postponed, but privately, there were still huge streaming numbers. So people in the privacy of their own homes or in the privacy of their own headphones were listening to Michael Jackson. And I do think there was a percentage amongst those people who did also believe the allegations, but were torn when it came to the music.
I think that is hard, because let's take away all of the allegations for a moment and just look at the art. And this is where it's really hard. Can you separate the artist from the allegations? Because there
and
is,
should you separate the artist from the allegations or the artist from the art? That's the other question.
And I have to say, I have a tough time with that, Kira. I don't know. Like, you know, I walked into that Michael movie going, oh, I don't want to be here. I feel a bit icky being here, given my beliefs on what I think of Michael and the allegations. Kira, As soon as it started, I was just like, well, why are my shoulders shaking? Why am I tapping? Why am I singing along? Because the music, he was for a time the king of pop, and he did produce some outstanding stuff. So, and I think it's different. Maybe had this been the 1990s, maybe the radio stations and the lack of tributes and, you know, nothing on TV, maybe that could have, you know, stopped, eliminated his legacy. But I think because now we are able to access stuff anywhere we want to, YouTube, Spotify, and his numbers on that are huge. So I think that his legacy has continued. What has happened with the Michael movie is that it's introduced him to a new generation of people. Like, I took my 15-year-old daughter to it, and she's like, wow, Mum, that was phenomenal. She straight away went and watched it with her friends. The same has happened with, I know, my friends' kids. They're all watching it with their friends, and they're all now playing his music on Spotify.
Mm. And those younger people, that generation, didn't live through the live trials like we did.
Yeah.
Weren't there when there were new and repeated allegations made, probably didn't see the 2019 documentary and listen to the fallout afterwards. So they can come to Michael Jackson fresh. Almost.
They really can, although I don't know if you've seen the new
Netflix documentary on him.
The Verdict. I watched that yesterday and I was just like, oh, it's a really tough watch. They've done it really well because they have, I hate saying that when we're talking about sexual abuse allegations, but I mean, the piece of work they've put together, it's not leaning heavily in bias in one way, because they've got the Jackson family, they've got, you know, the family and friends and the lawyers, and then they've got not the children involved, but like the lawyers who were bringing these allegations against him, and they involve the fans. So it is quite, I suppose the bias probably leans one way, but I think it is quite level. So the kids can, or the next generation, the people that knew nothing about Michael, could go back and watch this. And I wonder if they did watch this, would it change their minds about the movie they saw, the man in the movie, or will it not? Will they just go, will they be on the side of the fans because they're going into this with a different mindset?
Would his legacy look different, do you think, if he were still alive today?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, Kira, because I think these allegations would have been constantly hounding him, and he would have constantly had to have addressed them. Even though he was found not guilty in 2003, In court, he was found not guilty of 10 offences that were put up to him. But I think that would have meant nothing. People would have still kept asking. I mean, he did, before he died, he did announce his concert and he had massive ticket sales. I still think the fans would have gone, but I still think this would have been at him the whole time.
Mm. I had a ticket.
Yeah, you were going to go.
I was going to go. You know, Michael Jackson was my childhood.
And that's hard to separate, isn't it?
It's really hard to separate, but I haven't gone to see the movie because I can't go to something that I feel doesn't even address those allegations. I feel so conflicted about that. And yet, if I have such a poor memory, so I do, of particular incidents or events in my childhood, right? I just remember it was brilliant and I have this lovely feeling about it. But the one thing I can remember so vividly is Mum and Dad telling us to sit on the couch. We have a surprise for you. And then putting the little envelope around the door.
I just got chills.
And us looking at the envelope, the little Ticketmaster envelope it would have been, and not knowing what was it about. And then they pulled out the ticket and it said, Michael Jackson, yous are going to Lansdowne Road. I was 10. My brother was 12. My other brother was 8. I just will never forget that moment. Mm. And I will never forget the journey to Dublin. I can still see where we parked the car. Mm. I can still see the chips Dad got us before we went in. I remember the black and white headband that Dad bought us, the woolen headbands. As you do, that had Michael across them. I remember where we were in the stadium. I remember my mother or my brother sitting on a metal bar for the entire 4 hours that we were there because he got a better view. Mm. And I can still, as clear as day, see that moment when he popped up on the stage. And I remember that concert and I remember that feeling and it was phenomenal. But I can't forget the allegations now.
And see, that's the thing. So I think we all, if you came of age in the 80s and 90s, you will have a Michael Jackson story. And mine was the same. I think I went to see him, I think it was 96. He came to Melbourne. He played at the MCG, which is like Croke Park. So you can imagine how many people were there. We're in the nosebleed seats. and the excitement was just palpable. I had a friend, actually, who I had to drop off at the hotel because she had her Thriller CD, and she was one of two people who actually got the Thriller CD signed by Michael Jackson. She has it wrapped in, like, she hasn't, doesn't even have it on display because she's scared of it fading. But we do have to, and then I'm like you, then I'm like, oh, the allegations. And the only, I don't think I would have bought, and this is a cop out, because I don't think I would have bought a ticket, but I went because I had to review it. But I did bring my daughter with me. And even though I went in with those thoughts, I thoroughly enjoyed the film, and I do have to say, because of that concert experience, but I did come out feeling really conflicted. But Antoine Fuqua did originally have the 1993 case in the film, but he had to take it out.
Yes, he had material dealing with the allegations. It was actually filmed, but there was legal issues around one of the earlier cases, meaning it had to be removed. And I think that's maybe one of the difficulties I have with this movie, is that initially it was trying to rehabilitate
without a doubt
his image. It was trying to address those allegations back in the 1990s and ultimately deny them. That was the purpose of this movie. It ultimately became something else. If it goes on now and there's the second chapter, right? And it's hard to actually establish if filming has started for this sequel or not.
Yeah,
there's rumours and suggestions it has, but I think there will be clearly a second feature. If that then addresses the allegations, then does that mean the first one's okay?
No, I think they're mad to actually go and do a second one, because how do you do it? Like, I don't know. I don't think it makes the first one okay. I think the first one, there's no real, like, a lot of fans, even the fans, they say, like, when we look at it from a fan point of view, taking away the how we feel, they don't feel like they got a lot of insight into his life per se. You know, even the relationship with the father, the fact that Janet Jackson's not involved in it, his sister Rudy's not mentioned. I don't know if addressing the allegations make it okay. I do think they are mad to do a second one, because I don't think it'll have the universal love that the first one will have with the fans, because if it does mention the allegations, and I think it will be sanitised, I still think the fans will come at it for that.
Can a biopic, do you think, ever be neutral? Is it possible to make a film about Michael Jackson that feels fair both to fans and critics?
I think the problem with biopics these days is that it's both its positive aspect of it and the hindrance of it is the fact that usually either the person or the family are involved. And when that happens, you do get access to stories that you may never have known about, but you do get that sanitized version. It's like Bohemian Rhapsody. When Brian May insisted on being involved, all of a sudden it wasn't Freddie Mercury's story. My complaint with that film as well was, yes, it's a great film, but that felt like a concert movie. I wanted to know more about Freddie. Instead, we were hearing more about the band. So I think the only way you can ever get maybe a bit more of a balanced story is maybe if the family aren't involved. But then that people are going to say, well, then it comes from the view of someone who doesn't know what was going on. So I don't know. The answer is I really don't know.
Do we judge icons differently because they feel like public property rather than ordinary people?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And they just don't feel real, do they? And I think a lot of us, when it comes to icons, think about people you marvel in your 20s and your 30s. You look up to them, but it's different to the ones you looked up to when you were a child. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the ones.
I think that's the crux of it.
Yeah.
Actually, because this is woven into your identity and your childhood memories.
Yeah.
And it's childhood memories that are particularly resistant to change.
And that's the thing. Like, so imagine you meet these two legends, right? One that became a legend when you're in your 20s and 30s, and another one when you were coming of age, and they're no longer in the public psyche anymore. But if you meet them, you're probably going to freak out more about meeting them than about the one that you adored and you're still excited about meeting. But I think anyone who touched on your childhood, you just have a different relationship with them. And it's that innocence in it, isn't it?
Yeah, I just wonder, to go back to my point, that there was a section that was addressing the allegations in the 1992 years that was taken out. If it had simply portrayed that as opposed to trying to resolve it, right, which is what I think they were aiming to do in this movie, would that have been better?
Yes, But I think it's such a serious matter that I don't think you could just touch on that, because then they would have been criticised. I don't think they would have won, Kira. I think they're being talked badly about because they didn't include it, but they would have been criticised as well for including it, going, oh, wow, you acted like that was nothing. It was just a tick on his list of things that happened to him in his life. Mm. So I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that one.
Finally, what responsibility do filmmakers have when they are depicting such a controversial, divisive figure?
I think they have a responsibility to tell us the truth, but I think what's happening as well with biopics today is that we're no longer hearing the whole story. Like, look at the Bruce Springsteen biopic, look at the Bob Dylan biopic. You are looking at chapters of their lives. So I think if you're choosing to show a chapter of their lives, you need to be as true to that as possible. And if that didn't happen in the chapter of their lives, I think maybe in the press about it, that's when you talk about why you omitted it and stuff. But I think as long as you're not, let's say he talked about, we had the Michael film and it went from birth right through to death, then I think that the filmmaker has a real responsibility to include everything, including the scandalous stuff in the film. But if it's a chapter, I think that's a hard one to address.
In 50 years, what's going to matter most, do you think? The music, the allegations, or something else entirely?
I think in 50 years' time, we'll still be having the same argument, because both of them are just as important. Can I say that? Like, both, the art is important. I think this is why we're finding it really hard, because the art is important, but so is the man and the allegations against the man.
It's complicated. Serena Blessimo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it from us here on News Talk Daily. Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.